Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, very welcome back. 53106, the text number. If you want to get in touch, you can tweet the show at Off the Ball. Brian O'Driscoll is with us. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
We had Paul O'Connell on the show on Wednesday night, and he was talking about his experience at the Dunhill. He was not very happy with how he played. Said he told Joe off air that he went full Porrick Harrington on the practice range and ended up like just wearing himself out after about 25 hours.
That does not surprise me.
He's not an intense man at all.
No. He's cool. He'll just enjoy that week and just relax and take it all in. Everyone likes their competitive juices to get flowing that week, but he definitely brings those sort of things to another level.
He's
a bandit off 11 though.
Is he?
That is a joke. He was a good 7 handicapper a few years back.
Yeah.
Like to be giving him 11 shots.
And now he's got a bit of time.
Shots.
Yeah.
He must hit the ball a mile, does he?
Yeah, he does. He gives it a good crack, yeah.
He was saying that he found that, you know, the pros were belting it way past him. I was like, Jesus, you know. I mean, like, we've played with the pros and they belt the ball way past us, but we're not like 6'12" with the kind of power.
He was probably being humble.
It's true.
Definitely not off the amateur tees, like... They were so far forward in some holes.
Like how far?
Like on 18 in Carnoustie, I'd say it was 120 yards.
Really?
Genuinely, yeah.
Oh,
I'd say genuinely 120 yards.
At least you're like landing in the same place.
No, you're not. So you're miles ahead.
Right.
Like, so Carnoustie, that's obviously John van der Velde, the burn before the green. So their thinking was they had to have a high enough iron for the amateurs to be hitting in because of the crowd around there.
Yeah.
You can't be hitting three woods in and like hitting the green and then shooting into the crowd. So they thought there was more of a chance with 8 iron, 9 iron wedge.
Crowd safety issue.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
But initially you needed binoculars from the pros' tees to see the amateur tees. It was embarrassing.
And is it good crack or is it actually a little bit too nerve-wracking?
It's both.
Yeah.
It's both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much fun, but like you're nervous. I didn't want to be on again. I don't know if I said this probably last year or the year before. I did not want to be on any fairway. They're just too tight.
Right.
I wanted to be in the rough.
A little bit of.
I wanted
just no give at all.
I wanted some bounce and no give. And I was having a hard time with my wedges as well. So, because I get a good crack off the tee, that's one thing that I can rely on. So, I had wedges and I had my putter out from 30, 40 yards out the whole time.
How are the yips?
They're not too bad. The chipping yips, though, I had the wedge yips.
Right.
I was swaying and I was trying to get lessons and it's so infuriating.
Especially when there's a bunch of pros around.
So infuriating. On the Saturday, I embarrassed myself. Like I duffed so many wedge shots.
Was any of it on TV?
And then I just, no, I don't think so. And then I just picked the next one up. I was so sick. Like, you know, you'd hit it 270 or 280 and you'd have 50 or 60 yards in and I'd duff it and I'd just go... Screw this.
Yeah.
I'm picking up
next
hole. Yeah. I was so annoyed. I got so irate. And I'd be like, oh, it's okay. This is still for birdie out of a bunker.
But it was Paul O'Connell that was the real intense guy.
Of course.
Not anybody else.
We actually followed O'Connell around a bit and he had a beautiful floated wedge shot that just landed kind of on the top of one of the greens and fed right down to the hole. It was like this kind of perfect moment, you know, captured on the TV. It's like exactly when you want the TV cameras to be there. I don't know if they're
never live.
Stuff, I was going to say
they're not live.
It's like they just edit that bit out. Like, have we got a good shot of O'Connell? Great.
They did have one. I had one live last year. I didn't know at the time, and I hit a shot into the 18th in Kingsbarn, and I hit it pretty flush. And the next thing, it disappeared. And I kind of turned to my caddy. I was like, "Is that at the back of the green?" And he goes, "No, that's in the burn." And it was as if I was giving out to him for a bad clubbing. I was just having a bit of dialogue going, "Seriously, I hit that really well."
Wagging your finger.
Like, I got some WhatsApp of good shot from a few of the lads. Take a video of me berating McCaddy.
Wow, his true character finally revealed.
He's really lost the run of himself.
Oh, Christ. Right, let's talk about the games. Ulster and Watford kicking off this evening. Our live game on Sunday is Cass against Munster.
Yeah.
You're doing that?
Yeah. It's a tough place to get to.
I was going
to
say, the logistics. Dave's been banging on about the logistics for this.
You're leaving 5 minutes after this. Yeah.
Well, I'm in London tomorrow for a Premier League game and then I'll fly to Toulouse tomorrow night and then I'll get a train to Cass, train back from Cast after the game, fly to Toulouse Sunday night to Gatwick, fly home from Gatwick Monday morning.
Ooh. Perfect.
Yeah, the wife is real happy.
Yeah, delighted. Leinster Montpellier Saturday. So we'll talk about all those games. We just want to talk a little bit about what happened last weekend. As I said, Paul O'Connell was on the show on Wednesday night. He reckons the Leinster Munster game needs a bit more niggle.
You look at Johnny Sexton in particular, I think there's probably no tougher competitor in a Munster-Leinster fixture at the moment. You know, there's probably no one wants to win it more. He probably has plenty of memories of the old days of that fixture, probably memories of when we were dominant maybe. And no one wants to win that game or is more niggly in that game than him. But when you go to Irish camp, no one will go out of their way more to make you feel more part of the group or to explain anything or help you with anything right. that needs. And I think that's the way Ireland works now. I think just guys go in, when they're in there, they're 100%. And then when they're back in their province, they're 100%. I think the Munster-Leinster fixture could probably do with a bit more niggles than it has at the moment, I think. Because it is a great fixture, and there isn't many great fixtures in the Pro 12, Pro 14 at the moment.
What do you think of that?
Should I say this or not? I don't know if Dave Carney would agree with him, that he thinks that there should be more nickel or not. it's all, you know what, in parts I do agree with that. I think the feistiness of that fixture, it was your favourite game of the year.
If you compare 2017 to 2009, they're worlds apart, I feel.
Yeah, they are. But
and in that sense, he's
it's
right.
It's good in a way that there isn't so much competitiveness between the two, because then they have to go and be teammates.
I think.
Because there is.
They went and won a Grand Slam
that
year.
Something is driven between you a bit in those games. And certain players are able to let it go and when they come back together, and other players harbour it a little bit more. But I loved those years of niggle because it was niggle because it was such a great win to beat them. And it was so hard to come by. And that's why you wanted to put absolutely everything into it, because you knew you needed to get an effective result. And if you could beat Munster in a season, the confidence that would give you for the rest of your season was huge.
Because the level of both teams was so high at that point, they were at that stage two-time winners and you guys were about to become winners of the Heineken Cup. So the level was incredibly high. You wonder if it needs that bit of niggle to get it back to the level where everybody goes, okay, we are doing that and we are two of the best teams in Europe. Because they're pretty close to being two of the best teams in Europe. But do they believe that they're two of the best teams in Europe? I'm not sure.
I think Leinster definitely do. I think Munster still feel as though they're playing second fiddle to the team of the 2000s.
Yeah.
And they are.
And so under those circumstances, wouldn't you go out and try and kill Leinster to go, we're just, you know what I mean? It's like a proper staging post along the way.
But you need that. You need that in the vast majority of your pack. You differentiate the two packs, you know, and, you know, Flannery, even Hayes, you know, he wasn't a dirty player, but he was so physical. Maybe not as much Marcus, but he had a nasty streak at times.
Yeah.
The two second rows and Paulie and Dunners, Leamy, Animal, Axel, Animal.
Wallace.
You know, Wally Quinney. And Quinny.
Yeah.
Like all of them were dogs. You look at that back row, Tommy O'Donnell, not a dog, nice footballer, you know, and Pete a dog. Stander has a bit of dog in him for sure. The 2 second rows, not to the same effect of Paulie and Dunners, no way. The front row, Kilcoyne, John Ryan, Niall Scannell, not to the same degree. So I think you have to have it in the beast first of all, and that has to be in your makeup.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's there. I don't think you're looking at, I don't think these players are the same sort of personalities from an aggressive point of view as you did have with that old Munster pack. And as a result, they have modified their game slightly. I don't think they solely rely on that physical aspect being their game and being the foundations to build everything on.
It's clearly an evolution in terms of the playing style, and obviously that's a good thing too, but you would just be a little bit concerned that they've gone a bit too far away from having the dog as well. Like you need a combination of, okay, the game has changed. Like O'Connell was talking about how even his game when Rob Penny was there, there were times when he would pass the ball in midfield and it would be like, that wasn't my normal game, but I was doing it three or four times, and actually, you know, I wish I'd done more of that. So you can see how everything changes and everything moves on, and you can't just be a team of dogs anymore. But like, if Munster are going to be a team who reaches the semi-finals with a chance of winning the European Cup every year for the next 4 or 5 years, then they need to be able to scratch out wins against Leinster in the Aviva when Leinster have more of the ball.
Yeah, but
A way to do it.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think the scoreline flattered Munster.
Yeah,
it did.
So they were. They
besides
were much
the late
behind.
Try, you know, I think there was Leinster created way more. You know, Peter O'Mahony said it himself in the post match. He just felt like he was constantly exiting. Now this is with the post match after the Reggie conversation.
Yeah.
Where he, you know, it didn't feel as though they had any chance of getting momentum in the game because they were constantly in their own half.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's just as easy as more niggle or anything. I think you have to look at the setup. And I don't want to be disparaging to this Munster team because they still got to a semi-final. But you're not dealing with the same calibre of players as you had 10 years ago.
The circumstances are different as well,
but that's the simple facts of it. And you can spin it every way you want.
In some ways. I remember when these two provinces would have met each other, it wasn't always the week before round one of the European Champions Cup or the European Cup as it was. And no matter how much of a rivalry there might be between Leinster and Munster, the fact is this weekend's game was of far more importance to Munster and Leinster, the Montpellier and Cass games, than the game at the Aviva Stadium last weekend. Like, if you're going to choose which one to lose, it's no contest.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And like, if it was a really important game, would you have Blaendel playing in midfield?
But you don't get to pick is the thing. Like, you don't get to pick, I'm going to cough up that game. And like,
well, in some ways, Erasmus did pick.
Clearly prioritising, I understand that, but the team has to find a level and it needs to find form, and it's hard to do that 2 weeks out.
Yeah, but he didn't pick a team to lose. He picked a team that he still thought could be effective and going.
Did he
and
pick
give
the best 15 in their best 15 positions?
I don't think he knows it at the moment. I don't know if he knows. By playing Blaendel, I have to say, using Jaco Tote is a disaster for them. I think he has been a brilliant signing for them. He, besides everything that he's bought into, you know, their setup and their culture, what he offers them, they've always been very effective when one of their centres have been a huge ball carrying centre. Yeah. Trevor Halstead, even Rua Tupoki, even though he's a small guy in stature, carried super hard. Henderson before that.
Yeah.
So you look at that calibre of player, they've always done well. Jean de Villiers didn't have his greatest time ever, but again, a brilliantly physical player that could get you over the advantage line. They need that because they like to get their forwards into the game around the corner. You need target players. Yeah. So I think having, you know, Jaco Tote, and I do like Farrell. I think he's a good player and he gives them a bit of that dimension, but not to the same degree as Tote. So mixing it up and trying to find a new competition or a new centre combination of Farrell and Blaydenthal, is that what they're going to play next week in Europe? I could never see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess we're trying to work out where Munster are. And like, the point about the niggle is really just it's a conversation starter in terms of the level of intensity that fixture didn't have, which I think in a roundabout way was what Reggie was trying to ask Peter O'Mahony.
They don't have the history too, though. You've got to have history to create niggle. So that, you know, that semi-final in 06, like that hurt us so badly. And then, you know, it hurt them hugely in 09. That's around that time. And even going back to the Celtic League win in 2001, where we won with 14 men, that's what created it. And then we had a chip on our shoulder because they were getting to semi-finals and finals the whole time and we couldn't manage to get beyond a semi-final. Yeah. So we were building this, you know, hatred, for want of another word, of one another. Envy is probably a better term because we were definitely envious of them probably less so of us. But this was building. And then because we managed to pick one off over the course of that 7-8 year period at different times throughout the season, it added to the fixture for the following season.
It does feel like it's not pointless, that niggle that's absent, that it actually does drive both teams forward as well.
Totally does. I think it is an effective component of that game. Yeah,
and
I don't.
And that's why we need
I don't
to
see it as a negative. Yeah. I don't. But you have to. You can't just formalize it out of thin air. It has to build. It has to grow organically itself through through experience of winning and losing and winning and losing and, you know, being envious of someone else's success.
In a weird way, right? This, and it's it's not the same point, but people have been kind of talking down the league, right? It's the league, right? And it's the thing that you want your fans to come and see week in, week out. You sell way more tickets to your Pro 14 matches than you ever do to the matches in Europe because there's way more of them. And until Leinster and Munster are kind of meeting in semi-finals and finals and there's something, there's trophy on the line for it, I don't know, it just feels like the Pro 14 needs this fixture and the two teams need to take it a bit more seriously in a way. It's this, it all kind of feeds in, for me, to the fact that the competition, the Pro 14, isn't respected enough by everybody. You kind of need
Your season's still about Europe. It is.
So is it wrong to have it the week before the first European game?
Pardon?
Should it be elsewhere in the calendar if we really want this game to become something a bit more?
No, because I think it's a good one to get you physically prepared.
But only if you're picking your best team. But like, if it's a dry run for the European game, fair enough. So these guys can get up to full tilt. But if there's seven or eight changes made on each team, well
Zeebo
will come in.
Zeebo will come in. Scannell will come in.
Seven or eight maybe is an exaggeration.
But I don't think there's that many changes to that Munster team.
Or a month from now. Like, it's the same issue with the Interpros around Christmas time.
That's different.
So many of the top names are missing.
That's different because for that exact reason. And that is Christmas period as a player, you know that you're entertainment at Christmas. You don't have a Christmas like everyone else. And you as a professional player, footballer or otherwise, in sport, you buy into that. In racing too, that is your bit, the business end, or one component of the business end of your season. And I think it is wrong that those players get taken out of the big fixtures.
Yeah.
By the IRFU or whoever, by the player management system, because people do want the best games over that period. So I think they should definitely look on that. You don't want to dilute that fixture in any way.
It does sound like they're going to try and fix that and get more of the frontline players into it. So Munster have a lot of improving to do from last week. Razzie seemed kind of calm enough about that, pointing out that last year they'd struggle in that fixture and then obviously have a big win ultimately in their first round. But there's a lot of different circumstances this year. So I wouldn't be as confident that they're automatically going to step it up on Sunday.
No, I do think you can look, and hindsight will be a great one on this Cast game, because Cast are not in brilliant form. I think they're 10th in the top 14. They've been beaten at home. Sometimes this fixture in reverse is, you know, be great to get them in the final game because they're dead and buried. Yeah, yeah. And
I think
lacking interest.
Them being at home in game one is the worst time to get them.
Yeah, it probably is. I agree.
It's like travelling to Rome in the first round of the Six Nations. You know that you're getting the Italians at their best.
Yeah.
Where they'll be softened up by the time the French go there, the English go there later in the tournament. Exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we were looking at some of the stats around Cast. They've only won six matches out of the 24 they've played in their last four appearances in the European Cup. But they've won four of their first six home games in the competition. And I think therein lies the danger for Munster this weekend. That if Cast are going to win a match in this pool, it's going to be this Sunday. That's what Munster have to be so wary of.
Yeah. Munster obviously signed a new coach, made the announcement this week. It's a really unusual situation. And I guess there's swings and roundabouts to the whole. If Razzie had just left and they'd rushed to find someone to replace him in the summer, who knows what decision they would make. There at least is some kind of continuity. You just talking to some of the Munster players, they were very disappointed when the news broke about Razzie because they felt like they'd finally found a coach. They've had a load of coaches at Munster over the last decade or so, and it felt like here's somebody with a long-term vision who's really good and has Nienaber with them, and everybody bought in, everybody understood it, and you really trusted the players too. So you hope that the new head coach comes in and almost does nothing for the first 6 months. That it's next summer when he starts to go, right, I know who you all are now and I've seen what you're doing.
I think it'll have to be. I spoke to an ex-Springbok player in the last week when, you know, this news was breaking as to, you know, he was a viable option for Munster, and I asked what sort of personality he was. And this individual, he'd be relatively highly thought of, thought that he was a brilliant signing. Said they're going to love him as a personality. Quite different in personality to Rassi, but a workaholic. You know, he was questioning whether what sort of backroom staff team that, you know, might challenge him could be difficult. I think I said I alleviated any fears, saying that he'd probably picking up the dream backroom staff with young guys that have a lot to learn with great work ethic themselves.
Yeah.
that are happy playing second fiddle for a period of time. He's, you know, I think he tried to get away previously from the South African Union for another role. They didn't allow it. And now eventually said he wants to go away and pick up intellectual property from different countries and different leagues. And you know, has set his sights now on Munster. So I think from the sounds of this individual, it's he's going to be a great signing, but with quite a different style to Rassi. In playing, in manner, in personality and everything. So what I'm really intrigued by will be what happens for that first six-month period.
Yeah.
So he comes in, he inherits a team, he inherits a game plan. So he has to stick to that. That might be completely left field of where he wants to see the game played. So on your point, I agree, we're not going to see the full effects of him come in until pre-season of next year.
And the group of players that he has now are a completely different group of players even than they were 2 years ago, 18 months. Like Conor Murray is now at his absolute peak, and in terms of leadership as well, you've seen Stander become somebody who is completely a leader and has reached world-class status. So those guys need to be the voices who say, we're very confident in what we're doing. We'll take on board whatever you're saying, but like, this is what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, a point comes, and particularly in pivotal positions where you do take an awful lot of ownership. And that's where someone like Leinster are very lucky in that Johnny Sexton runs things.
Yeah.
He, you know, certainly by the sounds of things in the Lions tour, he gripped hold of their game plan along with Owen Farrell. And I think, you know, a coach like Gervin Dempsey who comes in, he facilitates them playing the style that they want to play. He's got a very clear understanding of what way the game should be played and how, you know, to utilise their strengths. That's where someone like a Conor Murray and a Stander in pivotal positions in 9, 8 and 9, and Peter as well, obviously as captain, that they have to decide what they want to do in conjunction with the philosophy of the coach.
Yeah.
And then mould in a game plan. Because there's nothing worse than a coach coming in, inheriting a team and then going, right, this is what we're doing. A la Rob Penny, making them play a style that just was not suited to Munster. And then after three seasons realised... Pardon?
You'll spend hours in a room with Erasmus. They'll go through every player, every member of the playing staff, every member of the backroom team. They'll pick through the academy. They'll watch endless hours of film. And Erasmus will advise them as to what the best way is to get through to May.
Yeah.
And you'd hope that Van Graham takes as much, if not all, of that on board as possible.
So the word that keeps coming back up is workaholic.
Yeah.
So it's a great starting point. Mm. Position, particularly in the position that he's coming in with, where he's going to have to listen.
Yeah. And learn a lot.
Yeah. And take on board what's there, and be sure in advance of him coming in, he'll, you know, do what other coaches do, and what Eddie Jones did with England, and watched, you know, the previous 12 international matches, and pulled apart all of the, you know, individual performances, who was good, bad, or indifferent. So going in, you're hitting the ground running as soon as you start.
Yeah. All right, we've got to take a quick break. 53106, the text number. If you want to get in touch, tweet us here at Off the Ball.
Off the Ball
on News Talk in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Yeah, you're very welcome back. We're talking rugby. Brian O'Driscoll is in studio with us this Friday night. We haven't talked yet about the Leinster Montpellier game or the Ulster Wasps game, which is kicking off around about now. And yet you're on the TV at the same point. A miracle of transportation. The road to Belfast, great these days.
Live studio from Belfast.
So Ulster and Wasps, right? What do you expect from this game? Because, you know, Ulster one of those few teams who actually knows what it's like to lose a game in Italy these days.
Yeah. Do you know what? Ulster, by their standards, have absolutely underachieved in Europe in the last few years. You know, they got to the final in 2012 in Twickenham against us, and since then it hasn't happened for them. And their expectation is to be a group, you know, to get into quarterfinals.
Yeah.
They did it, you know, many times throughout the 2000s. Obviously, they have the history of winning it back in 1999, but they've just flattered to deceive. I think this is a great opportunity for them. I think definitely with the first up game against Wasps this evening, I think looking at that Wasps side, they're decimated with injuries. I saw them last weekend against Saracens, and they're ripe for the taking. They are nothing on the side that were playing last year, that were beaten finalists in the Premiership. They're not playing with a huge amount of confidence. They don't even seem to be working as hard as they did last year. So I think if ever you're going to get Wasp, this is a good time to get them. And I certainly expect Ulster to win, maybe not comfortably, but win with the chance of a try bonus.
Right.
Well, they look right for the taking. They've lost their last four in a row. They will, I think they've retained seven of the side that started against Saracens at the weekend, and they have changed their half-back pairing, and it does mean Jimmy Goppert is back at fly half. But we learned an awful lot about Wasp, I think, in that quarter-final against Leinster last season. It wasn't a good advertising for the Premiership, because really they were pulled apart for a lot of the game against Leinster. And while they did get to the Premiership final, they couldn't even get past Exeter. And if Ulster can't...
Exeter are a good side.
Oh, no, but
Exeter,
I understand it, but they're
very
not,
good
they weren't
side.
Saracens, though. Like, I feel that if...
Exeter, I'm telling you, Leinster are going to be causing some serious trouble.
But you would imagine
Exeter
that Saracens
season.
Would have hammered Wasps in a Premiership final had they not hiccuped against Exeter. Look, if you beat Saracens in a Premiership semi-final,
yeah,
clearly you've a lot going
team.
For you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was actually at Sandy Park a couple of times last season, and they are really good. But I thought Wasps would have been their match in a Premiership final. I thought Wasps were going to be Leinster's match in a quarter-final, and Leinster were far better than them on the day. So if you can't get a bonus point in your first game at home against this Wasps team, they're going to have seven or eight changes and are trying to avoid a fifth consecutive defeat, well, then you wouldn't hold much hope for Ulster at all in this competition.
I do think Ulster will be delighted to see Danny Cipriani not playing in the warm-up game, and you can't look into warm-up games too much at the start of the season. He ripped them apart single-handedly.
Yeah.
Created three tries. I think he scored one himself. So not seeing his name on the team sheet, he's a longer term absentee. So seeing Jimmy Goppert who's coming back from an injury himself back there, I think Jimmy's actually developed to be a better 12 than a 10. I still think he plays too deep, and with Ulster's line speed, I just think, you know, the atmosphere in Kingspan, the bit of confidence that they've picked up on some good results, even though without brilliant performances.
Yeah.
I think Ulster will just have too much for them.
Are Ulster good enough? Like
they're good enough for this fixture, of course, but okay. Are they good enough to win over the course of six pools? That's been the question for a number of years, and the answer has been no. I think they've lacked the foundation. There's no doubt that they've got top class backs by European standards. They just haven't been able to create the foundation for them. And with a new halfback pairing as well, I think John Cooney's has come in and done really well for them. It was a bit of a surprise. I didn't think he'd stack up quite as well as he has. You know, very good footballer, great athlete, but just, you know, decision making in big games and key moments. I'm interested to see how that transpires.
Probably needs to get the game time as well, so he's benefiting from the fact that we're going to see Ruan Pienaar playing for Montpellier against Leinster.
Mm.
Montpellier, a pretty good team.
Look at that 8, 9, 10.
It's frightening. Yeah. It's absolutely frightening.
8 is Louis Picamoles, 9 is Pienaar, and 10 is Aaron Cruden.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And you may have Steyn in that back line as well. You might have
and Nadolo.
There, Nadolo. And they rested Jesse Mogg as well at the weekend in the top 14.
So I saw him score a try a few weeks ago. It was a joke. Yeah. It's
a crazy back line. So, look, we saw them play Leinster home and away last season. They were comfortably better than Leinster in Montpellier, and Leinster just dug in and were brilliant in getting that bonus point. Losing bonus point with a late try from Easton Athewa. At home, though, Leinster put over 50 on them.
Yeah.
So, again, you probably want to be getting Montpellier later at home later in the group. If Montpellier are going to pull an away win out of the bag in a pool, this, again, is probably it. Mm. It's going to be a really tough game.
Yeah, they look, you know, the bit that I've seen of them this year, and they're second in top 14.
Mm. They have lost their last two away games, and they've shipped 78 points.
Everyone loses away.
But
they're,
78 points over two games. That's a lot. It shows you that they can be scored against at the very least.
Yeah, didn't they be cast away though as well? So
yeah, they did.
There's like, they can't travel. Again, it's the awful cliche, but this seems like a more consistent team. And if
Fearn Cotter's a different coach.
Fearn Cotter's a really good coach,
Alex,
right?
Yeah, he is a good coach. Alex King's in there, Nathan Hines in there. You know, they've got a huge nucleus of international stars mixed in with a touch of French in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you
it's
can pull
really
all it's a Galacticos being pulled together, and judging by their performances and some of the results, they're going in the right direction. I still think Leinster will have too much for them, because Leinster don't lose that often at home, but it'll be tough.
Vern Cotter came up actually in the Stuart Lancaster press conference this week. Lancaster said that after England crashed out of the World Cup, Cotter came in and spoke to him and had a word for him in a way that many people didn't. You know, obviously it was a a tyre fire in the aftermath of that. And that came up this week because Rob Andrews has written a book on nothing to do with me, nothing to do with me. That whole thing where I was in charge of all of English rugby, well, that was all Stuart Lancaster's fault. They crapped out of the World Cup. Now, I don't know, but
Why is Rob Andrew writing more memoirs?
I don't know.
And why are they...
Who's buying Rob Andrew's memoirs? Well, who gives a rat about
people
Rob
are buying
Andrew
them now
about?
Because he's throwing comments like that out. That's the only way that you sell books when you're beyond your sell-by date of selling books.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's really annoying for Lancaster, who like...
It's so annoying for him. I really feel for him. And he's trying to put that to bed and he's trying to get on with things. And 2 years later, for that to be regurgitated back up in a blow-by-blow account, I just think is a small bit distasteful. It's not a player that's recalling their career. They're just immediately finished career. This is Rob Andrew...
An administrator.
35 years retired, 30 years retired. Maybe 35 is a bit harsh.
30 is probably a bit harsh.
I just don't see the sense in it. I think it's an unfair thing to happen to someone that I have to say I've grown to really like, Stuart Lancaster.
Yeah.
I think he's a super straight up guy, very generous, happy to meet me as a pundit and share with me his thoughts on how the game is going and give you the knowledge that he has. I think very few coaches are willing to do that.
Yeah, and also clearly beloved of his players, despite the fact he sounds like a bit of a hard ass. Like, those training sessions, by all accounts...
It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's turned that team who... Like, we kind of forget that that Leinster team shipped record home defeats and record away defeats in European competition. Granted, there was a lot of injuries to last season, suddenly being a team transformed and starting to look like they were capable of fulfilling all their potential. I'm not saying it's all down to him, but like...
And it's not. It's not. I think, you know, he's come in and had a massive stamp on things, but I think I'd be careful not to give huge credit to Leo and pulling it all together. I think what Stuart's allowed to do is he's allowed to go and do what he loves doing, and that's coach.
Yeah.
And not have to deal with all the administration side, which Leo is picking up.
It's a really good combination.
It's a great combination. I think they complement each other magnificently, and Leo doesn't have the ego where he's worried about Stuart gazumping him or stepping on his toes. He's happy to let him go and do his thing, and then he's happy to pull the whole lot together and use the sum of his parts to create a whole.
Yeah. What's the ceiling for this Leinster team? Like, again, it feels to me like a lot of it is dependent on injuries.
The fitness of your key individuals remains paramount importance.
You need luck.
And no more so than Johnny Sexton and Sean O'Brien, I think. Probably way more so Johnny Sexton. He is, for me, right up there with best European players and brilliant Lions tour. And
yeah.
I think he's started really well this season.
Such a massive game, isn't it? Like, essentially, if they lose the weekend, like, where does it leave them going to Glasgow, who are like ripping things up in the Pro 14?
I can see all teams getting three wins.
Like, it's a horrendous
I don't know who wins away from home there. I really don't.
A single away win from home and
we'll do it. And your three home wins. Yeah. I think that definitely gets you tops.
If you think
group.
Having to go to Scotstoun, Sandy Park and Montpellier in your 3 week games, like, it's just so daunting.
Mm.
But Leinster will take surely a massive amount of what they did last season. The places they went last season, dug in Montpellier, they should have beaten Clermont in that semi-final. I think even Clermont would have admitted that day they got out of there blessed to be in a final. You would hope that they've taken an awful lot and grown as a group from last year's semi-final in particular, where there would learn a lot of lessons to be learned.
And a lot of first-timers in there, yeah. Gary Ringrose in there, Dan Levy in
Joel
there,
Carman.
Cronin, these sort of guys getting a first taste of European semi-finals. So, yeah, I think that will serve them well, even though it was hard to take at the time. It just shows that semi-final level, you can't give someone a 14 or 12 point lead.
Yeah. There's one last thing we wanted to play, which is obviously the oldest story in Irish rugby. It goes all the way back to Enfield in 2009.
Yeah.
So here's Paul O'Connell's take on it. Have a listen.
Everyone has their own memories of that meeting.
Right.
And everyone has their own version of events. Like, and I'm pretty sure mine is the most accurate. I think... We were split up into groups and everyone had to, you know, there was, I can't remember what we'd, you know, we were doing a SWOT analysis maybe or something. and we were on string sweet. This is opportunity stretch. But I think Raj was in Rav Kearney's group, and you had to privately, like, you had to, each person had to present what their group had said, you know? And so Raj had said that bit. But he didn't say anything. I wonder if the Munster lads, my memory of what Rob had said was, why can't we have something like the Thomond Park atmosphere in Lansdowne Road, or that kind of intensity? So he was asked, I think he was asking the question in a decent and nice way. It was kind of complimentary.
Yeah.
You know, we were always massive rivals, and you were probably more friendly with the Munster guys than you were with the Leinster guys. But I do think that few days in Enfield, I think the Irish team was very, very tight, certainly after that, and certainly towards the end of my time at Ireland. We almost became like a club team. We were that type.
Nice of him to explain SWOT analysis for anybody. His recollection is the best.
Who am I to argue with him?
Is he right?
I don't know. There's been so many variations thrown out there.
How can there be so many variations? Like, you were all in the room.
My recollection
only
was
one thing
that,
happened.
That
Rob, so what happened?
Rob put it to those Munster lads that they did not play like they did in red jerseys, like they did in green. Maybe he did do it that way. I don't remember.
You were there.
My recollection is that he put it to them. He did say,
so
don't think you play with
in,
the same
in as
passion.
Nice a way as Paul suggested.
No, I don't think so. I think he, and I thought, the reason that I remember that way, because I thought that is ballsy for a young lad to do that. And, you know, hadn't been involved in that World Cup. He'd been left out. So he wasn't even part of the disappointment to try and make it better. That was an outside point of view coming in and going, I don't think that you guys feel the same way in a green jersey as you do in red. And that's how I remember it.
And Paul O'Connell took it as a compliment. But it worked, whatever it was. Like, it doesn't sound like there was a massive... It didn't lead to fisticuffs.
I agree with Paul. I think... And winning a trophy obviously always makes you feel better about yourself and, you know, paints over any cracks that might have been there.
Especially,
but I do remember
there
being
games.
A lot of tightness in that group. I think we really did enjoy one another. And I think it also... not just for the Six Nations, when we won that Six Nations, but also from a Leinster perspective, when we won in 2009 in the semi-final, that allowed us to be less on the back foot when we were in international camp too.
The envy disappeared.
Because now we were a big player ourselves.
Yeah, proper equals.
Yeah, yeah. And we were on the back foot. We were for years.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't doing what they were doing.
Yeah.
What do you mean on the back foot when you make your way into international camp? Like, what's that mean?
I think it is. I think
who were the big dogs?
Do you know, well, I think during the success of 06 to 08, it was a very Munster-driven ship in Ireland. You know, very Munster-orientated. We had six or seven of the Munster pack in there. It's hard not to do what they're doing in their provincial setup in the national team as well. Also had Declan Kidney, Eddie, who was happy to listen to his players, and Paulie was driving things as well. And who are you to argue with that too? They had an effective winning mentality.
Yeah.
So you have to roll with that too. And then I think we just felt, by the way we played and won our game in 2009, that we had a lot to offer too.
Yeah.
So it was then an intertwining of the two philosophies.
Which ultimately you needed to be.
And then I think they were like, sometimes you don't see that success immediately. You look at a few years later when we won back to back Six Nations as well. That time, you know, that takes time for that seed to grow as well. And I think it eventually did.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Brian. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Enjoy your evening in Belfast this evening.
Thank you. Freezing up here.
53106, the text number. If you want to get in touch, you can tweet us here at Off the Ball. We're going to hear Paul Galvin in studio telling us about his take on the season that's just finished. And we've got a Friday Night Crappy Quiz for you as well.
Off the Ball.
On News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.